Thank you very much, Tanya. I'm letting you see my unfortunate condition. I'm at the airport and it's very noisy. I'm going to turn my camera off. I'm a little concerned about bandwidth, but let me introduce Lindsay out in Bogard. There's Lindsay. Lindsay's over in the Netherlands. What city are you in, Lindsay?
I'm in Delft, next to the Hague.
You're in Delft. Yep. Okay. So she joins us from there. I'm not sure where folks are joining us from today. Maybe if you wouldn't mind, take a moment and put in the chat where you're joining us from so we can get a sense of the global diversity present in the group today. Anyway, I want to introduce Lindsay and then let her run the show here. Lindsay has had an abiding curiosity about the relationship between communications in organizations, or communication, if you will, and business performance. And that led her to get really interested in finding ways of improving alignment in groups. She founded, in fact, an organization that focuses on that called Mirror Mirror, and has a network of certified Mirror Mirror practitioners. She has an instrument, and I believe she's recently been updating it, refining it, but she's been supporting leaders and their teams around alignment globally for quite a while. She happens to be a certified, I guess, AIBC, the International Association of Business Communicators, a certified business communicator. She has in her background studied music and journalism, as well as international communications management, and is also a member of the Chartered Institute of People Development, the Reputation Institute, and a published author in what's called the Gower Handbook of Internal Communication. So that, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors, is Lindsay. Lindsay, if there's anything you want to add to that, feel free. I'm going to go on mute and let you take it from here.
Thank you very much, Carlos. Really nice to meet you guys, and lovely to be able to present and host this interactive session today. So we've got a bit of a presentation, a breakout presentation, discussion. We're going to take you all through it. Just to add to that, so I'm British. I'm based in the Netherlands. I married a Dutchman with a really long, complicated surname that you did really well pronouncing, actually, Carlos. And with a background in communications, I thought that alignment initially was a communication intervention. It's actually more than that. It's about learning. It's about diversity and inclusiveness. And I think it's also about OD. A lot of people talk to me about, you really need to engage with OD, which is partly why I'm here today. There was an article that I wrote along with Steve Hearsome, who's in the European OD network, and also with Naomi Stanford, who edited the article that I sent out. Tanya can send those links. So we're really here to kind of explore that today, and I'm going to jump in straight with the presentation, go through a couple of slides just to outline what are we talking about, because this word alignment is all over the place. So I'll share my screen and kind of start talking about, there are, as far as I see, three levels of alignment around that people talk about. And we're not talking about all of those levels. The first is about alignment of the parts, if you like. So it's about alignment of the enterprise to strategic intent. Jonathan Trevor talks about this a lot, where strategy, purpose, systems, capability, architecture, et cetera, connect up. You're very familiar with that. Then there's a kind of, this is more about the communication piece, which is alignment of people to the enterprise in terms of how do they understand the strategy? How do they understand their role in it? And then there's another piece about how do people actually align with each other? So that sounds odd, but of course it's crucial because people need to share a common understanding about what's going on, not only cognitively in terms of how they understand the strategy in relation to their work as a group, but also behaviorally. How do they actually align in terms of learning behaviors to be able to then deliver together? So we're talking about that third piece. And it just happens. Just as a warm up, of course, we all know this, but just to get you sort of into this topic, everybody has their interpretations. There's a lot of ambiguity around. People have to make assumptions to try and connect the dots. They do that with their preferences, their biases. People are, and content are influencing them all the time. Inevitably, people are not going to make sense of the world in the same way. With that comes a huge opportunity for new ideas, But the downside of that is, of course, people don't connect. They're not lined up. They're not pulling in the same direction because they make decisions and actions based on their interpretations, and they're different. Now, all of the problems that you can see on the right-hand side of the screen here are arguably a result of misalignment, because ultimately it's people making decisions and taking actions that lead to outcomes. So it's easy for people to kind of focus off, you know, what's the problem here? Oh, it's leadership. What's the problem here? Oh, it's that process and that structure. Well, what created that process and that structure? How is that leader thinking that they're connecting with people? Of course, it's much more than misalignment, but you can see misalignment as a root cause. Just to get into this a little bit more, alignment is not about everybody thinking the same thing. The Amir Goldberg, who's a professor at Stanford Graduate School of Business, talks about the fact that most successful teams balance diverging perspectives in the ideation mode, as we've talked about. So diverging perspectives are useful. Of course, that's the basis of D&I. But you don't want to have that all the time. When you come up to implementation mode, you've got converging perspectives. So alignment, right at the top here, it's not necessarily everybody thinking the same thing. One way of aligning is having everybody reach consensus on the way forward. So consensus on the way forward, having considered the perspectives, whether you agree with them or not fully, is an alignment, as well as conflict, which is the very opposite, on what that way forward is. Even if they agree on what's happening and what their objectives are, they may not agree on the way forward, so there's disagreement. So I like to think about it as a continuum with divergence and convergence, and you're never going to get full alignment, let's face it, and you don't really want to. You just need to make sure that the proper things are aligned, either in terms of agreement, which has the danger of groupthink, or in terms of agreement on the way forward. So first part of this, Tania is going to throw you straight into breakouts, because the first question is, oh, that's the wrong question. Sorry, I just showed you all my slides. Here we are. So we're just going to warm up on this in small groups. It's not something that I'm going to collect views on afterwards from everybody because we just don't have time. But I want you to just kind of get into the zone and do quick fire reactions. Introduce yourself to each other. You've got 8 minutes to answer the question. You know, from an OD perspective, what actually gets in the way of alignment? What's this got to do with OD? Okay, so I'm going to stop my screen share and ask Tania to add you into breakout groups for 8 minutes on that question.
One quick question. We have one person who's joined by a telephone, and I just want to make sure, are you video in one by name and telephone by audio? So put your voice and your head in the same room.
Tanya, it's Teresa Garcia. I just put it on, moved it from phone to the computer.
Okay. Then I don't have to worry about you being in two separate places at the same time. So, all right, I'm going to open the rooms and you'll all be pulled back. You'll get a 60-second countdown. And I will repost the questions. I'll broadcast them into the rooms as a refresh on what you'll be discussing in the first few minutes here.
Great. See you later.
And Tanya, you saw that Trina is also phone and computer, or...
I did not. I'm only seeing one phone number.
She popped it into the chat a second ago. Trina Farnsworth. Okay.
It'll take me a quick moment, but I want to get everybody in, and then Trina, I'll see that I get your number and your head in the same space.
This meeting is being recorded.
I see we don't yet have everybody back. There are only 15 folks here. So can we wait for just a moment?
Yeah, it's one more second, then everybody should be pulled back in.
Great.
Okay, I was going to ask you a question, Craig, just picking on somebody at random, actually, about what was the one take out from your room about that then?
I think we focused really on role clarity, really getting in the way of alignment. both role clarity and governance and clarity of decision making and decision rights.
Right. Okay. So, well, thank you for that. I'm going to just jump straight back into a few slides because unpacking this a little bit more. Let me just share my screen. Because it's not just about alignment between people on the whole system at work. It's also, there's different kind of types of alignment gaps. Now, this is a very big, busy slide, but it's really worth looking into because, you know, if you think about it, you've got, you know, straight information gaps. Let's just jump into that second one at the moment. And an information gap is literally, you know, something about the strategy or some relevant knowledge or information that is either wrong or it's missing. And the ways that you can deal with that, this three things, is that we're talking about it in terms of coaching, but OD is a different lens. So on coaching to close the gap, you'd need to be aware of it. You'd need to be accepting of that gap. You'd need to be willing to close it. And then effective conversation skills. The information gaps is the easiest one to close because obviously people become aware of what they don't know. And then they can ask for questions to plug that gap. But when you get into other gaps, like perspective gaps, so this is about, you know, anything concerned with the shared context, the strategy or what to do or how to do it, people will look differently at all of those things. It's usually caused by complexity. Hybrid workplaces don't help where people haven't got the opportunity to check out how they're picking up the world or making sense of it. Complex environments, there's just a lot to align on. Again, how would you coach to close the gaps? Awareness, acceptance, willingness, effective conversation, but it's also about open, respectful, and inclusive behaviors so that people can open up to each other and really stop defending themselves or persuading, but actually listen to other perspectives about what's going on. And then they need to be in the best interests of the team to close those gaps in an effective way for the organization.
Lindsay, I'm going to interrupt for just a second if I could, because I was taken by this slide when you first shared it with me. Craig, you talked about your group talking about roles, responsibilities, governance, decision-making, which I would guess is in the structural space, I'm guessing. I'm just curious about, very quickly, for just 60 seconds, if you don't mind, from any of the other groups, did any of what you talked about touch on any of these other gap areas that Lindsay's identified here? Just tossing it out there.
Yeah, we talked about the importance of having the right forms established for the right conversations to be had among the right people at the right time. So this whole idea of structuring a series of forums that help process these perspectives and these issues is something that has to be actively in front of mind when someone is implementing a strategic design. So creating the places for these conversations to happen with among the right people is important.
Okay, good. One other comment? Anything else from the groups before we move on? Okay.
Well, what I was going to say was in response to that is that what we found is that if people try to go about the business of alignment together at the same time as progress the business in whatever agenda they've got, the two can be quite frustrating together. You know, when you're in a meeting and somebody says, hold on a second, let's define that word. I mean, that's fine. But the people who kind of think that everybody gets it get a bit frustrated because you're taking a step to the side. And there's many times when alignment is actually the exploration and the reflection on where are we all at and where do we all need to be at? What's our current reality? And what is a better current reality? And that's a conversation in itself. So I really appreciate that point, Mike. I'm just going to move on to this slide because you might be thinking, well, how do you do that? So what is this whole thing about identifying and measuring alignment gaps? So there's a couple of things. I'm going to show you a few examples of the data we collect. But one is that in a diagnostic, when you ask people open questions like, what is the purpose of your team? What frustrates you? What is going on that is affecting your team in the organization? and people are able, and you're able to synthesize those comments and just find out where the common ground and differences are. If you do it anonymously, it's kind of safe because people don't feel exposed. You're able to see the gaps because you're just comparing the views. And when you ask people questions in a like for like way, so for example, when we ask behavior questions about, we don't ask them how they prefer, how they behave themselves. We ask them about how they observe the team behaviors. And in that way, you can compare the responses to see actually where is their conflict and where is there not conflict. So for example, in some of our reports, we summarize the highest behavior scores and the lowest behavior scores out of about 30 in total. And these, again, just to remember, they are about observations of the team. So these are the labels that we give the indicators here. So for example, is your team confident that it will succeed? Here, the average score is 79, but the minimum and maximum scores provided are 50 to 100%. So it's a high scoring item. It's the top scoring item for this particular team, but it's got a fairly wide range. But the real flags come up in the lowest behavior scores, where, for example, do you see that your team has clarity on its direction and remit, which is pretty crucial, of course. That's partly what we're talking about here. 21% average, quite a wide spread of scores, right down from zero. So somebody in the team has said zero. Then we've got, does your team sufficiently reflect on progress? Can your team tolerate mistakes? Are you efficient at implementing ideas? Those three ones, by the way, I've skipped across to the next slide, because even though, you know, you've got various behaviors here, these three ones started appearing at the beginning of COVID-19 as a bit of a theme. And we were checking our algorithms and we were going through it, but it looks like no matter what culture you're in or what part of the world you're in, reflection on progress and clarity on direction and remit were always in the bottom three scores. And this is low. I mean, can you imagine being a leader of the team? I don't see that team alignment, by the way, is a responsibility of a leader, because it's a reciprocation thing. You cannot align a team. You cannot tell a team to align. This is why a coach is needed, kind of for the process to be objective and to work through an alignment process, which is really a short structure. But in all of these teams, we have these kind of common, now, this is not every team, of course, but it's the common theme going on here.
Lindsay, if I'm going to interrupt just for a second, there is a question in the chat about the survey, which I think is fundamental. So if you could take a moment to look at that. Thanks.
Is it a bounded survey? These ratings are quantitative, so it's agree disagree scale, but a lot of the other questions that we ask, so I'm not sharing the entire report with you, although I'm happy to do that if you want to contact me, but a lot of them are open text. What would you say the strategy is of the organization is? What's the vision of the organization? What concerns you about this team? So it's a mix of both.
This what we're looking at here, though, just to clarify, these are bounded questions. Agree, yeah. Disagree, whatever. Okay, that's helpful. Thanks. Yeah.
Role rating questions that are easiest to show you, because you don't have to get your head into a particular context to understand how the answers differ, actually. But I think in summary, before we go into the next breakout question, because I've just given you a kind of taster for what alignment data might look like, is that all of these behaviors, by the way, are based on the research around the different kinds of learning behaviors that people need in order to be able to have the capability to align. So that capability that's in the areas of psychological safety, interdependence, group potency, task coherence. We're really only looking at this from an alignment perspective. So I'd say then, if I was just to summarize what's going on here as a sort of, you know, what is alignment? Alignment is not how people understand things individually. It's about the shared meaning that sits in the space between people. It's about compatibility or consensus, as we said before, not necessarily people thinking the same thing or having groupthink. It's cognitive and behavioral. We've talked about that. It's not fully achievable. Some misalignment will always be present. The trick is finding the key issues. It's constantly evolving because the context is evolving. People's mental models are updating all the time. So you can nail it at one point in time, but you probably have to come back to it in times of high change fairly frequently. It doesn't happen automatically. I wanted to put that point in because there are many organizations who just kind of think this sort of thing gets ironed out in meetings and conversations. There are plenty of examples that we've got of where people have answered differently about what, for example, the purpose of their team is, when they had no idea that they were thinking something different. It's quite invisible. Alignment is also risk avoidance, because by preventing alignment from occurring or getting out of control, you're actually preventing, of course, all of these issues that come up from getting worse. And alignment is an enabler of engagement and effectiveness. And this is what the diagram is all about. If you empower people to be asking questions, to be curious, and to become, to develop a shared reality, a shared way forward, they are then more likely to get engaged as an outcome. I'm a very strong believer in the fact that you cannot just engage people as an action. They become more collaborative, and then effectiveness is a result of that. So I'm going to stop the screen share, and I'm going to go on to this last breakout question here then, which is that one that came up before. But this is the question now for a much deeper breakout. We're going to give you 15 minutes. Sorry that the last breakout was too short, but this is the main one. We're going to go into slightly larger groups. What is the relationship? This is where I'm really interested in your point of view. What's the relationship between OD and this huge, crucial puzzle here that is called misalignment? Because there's got to be a way of looking at this through the OD lens. And that's what this is all about. So I'm going to stop the screen share and hand back to Tanya, who's going to put the breakout groups together.
This meeting is being recorded.
Thank you for reconfirming, Diane.
Thank you back, everybody. Welcome back, everybody. So who knows who was in which breakouts? Just give us go down to the reactions box and give us a hand raise or a wave if you want to comment on what did you guys end up talking about in your groups. Let's start. And I would think, Tanya, this will move them to the top if they raise their hand, right? Using the reactions feature at the bottom of the... So you're all familiar with how that works in the bottom of the Zoom screen. I'm assuming. If you're not, please say so. Okay, Kevin, I see your hand up. What do you got for us?
Well, in our group, I was asking our group how, when you're trying to align a group, how often do you put up a methodology like Lindsay's or survey versus it's an informal posing questions to the group? And there, I think we had a really interesting discussion about that and agreed for most of us, we're asking probing questions to try to align the group. And we pondered if we could benefit from having a methodology like the grid you put up, Lindsay, or an actual survey, surveying the group where they're at.
Okay. What was there a consensus in the group, Kevin, or just conversation?
Well, I think it was a typical OD consultant sentiment of, gee, it would be great to have a methodology. You know, we should have a methodology. It'd be great to have more of a methodology and survey. In reality, we ask probing questions.
Okay. All right.
But kind of challenging ourselves. I mean, I'm really interested in that grid. You know, I'm asking myself, should I start using that to align?
Mm-hmm, right.
Wondering what Lindsay and others think of that.
All right. Well,
I just want to jump in, if I may, by saying that there are a lot of, especially between different levels of seniority in an organization, there's a lot of political and social kind of backdrop to conversations that can occur between people about what kind of questions they're asking, how much bias is in the questions, what questions do they know that they need to ask or not. That, like, a straightforward diagnostic that takes like 20 minutes for everyone to complete, and then bam, you've got like a whole system report, gets over, especially if it's anonymous, because if you're asking those questions in a really standardized way, obviously I would advocate it. But anyway, that's what came out of the groups.
All right. Harris, see your hand up, and then Jane.
Yeah, hi, everyone. So we had a spirited discussion. It was Eleonora, Trina, Teresa, and myself. And we said that one of the things, you know, people get frustrated, our clients, by talk about misalignment. So it would be helpful to put this in the context of, you know, where is the organization today? Where is it headed? What are the fundamental pieces that they're trying to do? And you know, to help articulate the sources of misalignment that in their view is getting in the way of them doing their jobs or getting to the results. So narrowing the scope, whichever method or model that we may use, that just becomes helpful because we all agree that addressing all forms of misalignment is almost like a nirvana, as Lindsay had said, that's just not even possible. So just being smart as consultants to focus on things that really matter. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Harris, very much. Jane, what about in your group? What was talked about? You're still muted, Jane. Can you unmute yourself?
Sorry, I forgot I got muted when we got pulled back in. So I kind of felt like I hit the lottery in the group that I was in. And I'm sorry, I don't remember everybody's names, but it was myself, Craig, Margaret, and a couple of other people. Sorry. But we actually talked about some of the best practices that some of the people in the group were already using. And, you know, I don't want to speak for them. I'd love if they build on them. But Margaret, for example, uses kind of a continuum, an alignment continuum, where she asks people to, you know, say how aligned they are with the decisions that are being made. And then if somebody, you know, is less than a certain number, then there is a discussion about what does it take to get the person, you know, get the person there. We also had, you know, people that were spending a fair amount of time building the team dynamics before you even get into the design work itself, so that you can have those more rich and honest conversations along the way. So I really felt like there were a couple of great suggestions for how to use the design process to build the alignment.
Can you, so I want to go back to that. So you just said ways to use the design process to build alignment.
Yeah.
Can you clarify? I'm not putting together what you said prior to that and that statement. In other words.
So you're doing your design, right? At the end of the design session, and I can let Margaret jump in here to describe her process. But let's say you end a design session and you made a decision.
Right.
You then do an alignment check-in. Okay, how we've just had this conversation, made this decision. Can everybody, you know, where are you on this continuum from 1 to 10? On how bought in are you to where we've landed?
Specific to whatever the design discussion has been and the conclusions you reached. Okay.
Exactly. It's also, Jane, you're doing
Carlos
awesome.
Related to that.
Margaret, hold on, Craig. Let Margaret go, and then we'll come back to you, Craig. Thank you. Margaret, go ahead.
Craig has some great follow-up to this as well. But on that continuum concept, it's also iterative. You don't do it once. You do it sort of as a continuous check-in as decisions. So because you know that org design at the end of the day is just a set of trade-offs and decisions as you get to the end. So this is one way to help just uncover, help people be more vulnerable about where they are not aligned too. And we phrase the question, not I'm not going to fix it, I'm not going to be the one, but what can the group do to help Margaret move her thinking, or what does she need from us to help her get to the next, to be more aligned with the whatever we're designing to.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Margaret. Craig, and then Jim.
Yeah, it's almost like when you go through the design process, the team becomes more confident, they become more high performing, they become more comfortable with having differences of opinions and sharing those differences of opinions. And it feels comfortable to have debate as opposed to conflict. And so the team really, it's almost like training for a marathon. You start working out and you get better and better and better at doing it. So the design process itself builds that kind of alignment.
Okay, good. Thank you. Jim.
Just thoughts on methodology. For me, the challenge has always been to get teams to put the the social aspects of solving the problem in the foreground and the technical aspects of solving the problem in the background. Work together first, get used to working with each other, challenging each other, disagreeing with each other, and then coming to consensus on things, even if you don't agree, and then tackle the problem. My colleagues, my partners in the firm, a couple of them prefer the other way around. Let me take the first 2 days and walk through step by step the methodology we're going to use to solve the problem. Me, I always tell them, give them the methodology after they've already experienced it and hand it to them so that they can repeat it and then ask them, ask questions about what we just did and learn tools. The second is that idea of write it on a post-it note, stick it on the wall, and then get together and do the affinity diagram, do the cause-effect relationships, do the causality relationships and correlations and such, so that they learn to work together first before you start to tackle the tough problems that they may have emotional connection to.
But I think in both approaches, Jim, it's about getting them to work together on something. Am I hearing that right?
Something meaningful.
Right, something meaningful, real work.
Even if they don't think it's meaningful in the first place. We're here to design an organization. Let's get out the org charts. Forget it. We're designing an organization to fulfill a purpose. What's the purpose of the organization?
Right. So what I'm hearing is that the key to alignment is getting people working on meaningful stuff together in ways that allow them to build relationship that will then facilitate.
Get comfortable with working with each other.
All right.
And model that. Model that behavior outside of the workshop too, because in order to make that journey, they'll be in similar spaces. So start modeling it. So it's not just in the room, not in the black box, but it's now part of our culture.
Yeah, and if you ask them, give us some examples of how working this way might have helped you to avoid a conflict or to resolve a conflict recently. Everybody has an example.
Okay, all right.
I suppose where we were coming from is that in the Johari window, I mean, there's a lot of OD and OD chat in the background here, and I accept that that this is fundamentally a coaching proposition. But the main question to this group was, how can the OD process minimize alignment for the organization? And I think all of the points that I've just recently heard about questions that can be asked and ways of dealing with it on a one-to-one basis are great, but they don't then take it to a systemic level, because it's a sort of bit by bit thing. And the other thing is that they don't then get over the fact that many people do not know where the alignment gaps are, because there are so many things to align on. So I think I get a bit frustrated when the solution comes down to we need to ask questions, or, you know, we need to behave this, because it's absolutely right, of course. But misalignment is such a big issue that it feels like something much more systemic needs to be, much more systematic, and repeatable and measurable needs to be done about it. So that was the question back to the group. It was, what can OD do on a process kind of way to minimize a misalignment?
So Lindsay, to help me understand, I think what you're saying is you're hearing good ideas. What's the next step of taking it? And some people have suggested, I think it was Margaret who said, role model it outside the room as a way to deploy these behaviors and approaches. Are you suggesting that perhaps something more disciplined or intentional is helpful beyond that?
Because we're working in a hybrid environment and because everything is so complex and there are so many priorities, that kind of way forward can just easily drown in an organization after the intention has gone. After the intention and the focus has gone from let's ensure we're aligned. And it's not kind of catchy, sticky and permanent and really focused on shoring up the value from a focus on alignment that could be had, which is why,
Okay. Just checking.
I feel like this is where the change management process actually comes in, right? And how you're actually, I think there are two things I would be looking at. I'd be looking at the change management process and what the things that I might need to do to build more alignment, because a lot of times, at least in my experience, the lack of alignment comes from lack of understanding of what it is that you're trying to do, and people maybe not really understanding the full, you know, purpose of what it is that you're trying to do with a design. So I'd really be looking to the change management process, but I would also, you know, really go back and look at what I call, you know, I was trained in the Case Tesla methodology, the interconnectivity. So are we designing, you know, the right governance forms for decisions to be made in this, you know, future going forward, right? Because there is a tendency to sort of drop off the effort, I think, when you get to this like harder piece of the implementation and all the little levers that you have to pull to make the design work. And that takes time, and it also means that the business can't lose focus when they have the answer to the big question of, let's say, structure. Right now, you got to go look at roles. You got to look at, you know, sometimes process flows, all kinds of things that would support the decision and create alignment.
All right. We are coming. We're at the top of the hour. And I, if you want to hang around, I guess, Tanya, is that okay if people want to continue this for a little bit? I've got to run and get on my flight. I want to thank you all for your engagement and brilliant ideas. There's more I want to throw into this, but I got to go. Thank you all. And Lindsay, you and I can catch up next week, and I'll see my fellow ODF members on a future pop-up session. Thank you all.
Thanks very much.
But yeah, I'm happy to leave the Zoom open, and if folks want to stay on, because you've got a little bit of availability and that works with Lindsay, or the rest of you just want to continue to chat, I'll see if people stay to decide whether we're going to continue recording or not.
Sure. Yeah. No, happy to stay on and chat for a little while. Because, you know, it's a bit of a difficult topic to grab hold of, because it's OD, it's change management, like I said, it's organization design potentially. So yeah, any more conversations or thoughts, welcome. I'm just reading your comment, Greg.
I think the way I heard you describe your last comment, Lindsay, was some of the frustrations that I have working internally in organizations after a major org design or redesign has happened, is that people then start to narrow the conversations down into, this is what's wrong with you, or the way you're not doing things, or this is the gap around you or your team, as opposed to standing back and saying, let's look at that design that we have, either from the major org redesign or from the small redesign that we did, and start talking about what just changed in the systems, what changed with our understanding of the strategy, the capabilities required to deliver the strategy, what shifted in decision rights. Instead of pointing at the people, if we start looking at the system and what changed, I think we identify gaps and misalignment a whole lot faster than the conversation about who's not doing what or who didn't understand what.
And I think the other problem with conversation is that people can so easily get stuck in the weeds, because it gets round to, well, we started doing it like that because our old boss said, and that stakeholder who's not actually, you know, integrating properly with our job, with our work here, and looking backwards and blaming backwards, and it's probably all correct, but it's not constructive at all. What's constructive is actually, where are we now, which is this perception kind of capturing piece. Where are we now, and what do we then need to do? Is it a system fix? Because a lot of those perceptions will point to an aspect of the structure, an aspect of the organization that can be fixed by design. So perception is, the basis of it, if you like.
Yeah, I love that. I think that the people side has to work alongside the system side. You can't ignore one or the other, but you can't just overly focus on the people side. You have to work both.
And so the way people perceive things is a product of the context they're in, the diversity at play, and the experience with them. And so it's not about them or them. It's about what's in that, assuming everybody is coming from the right motivation, which is that last alignment gap, which was about purposeful alignment gaps that people use for their own gain that you're never going to get people to report on in the survey, of course.
Yeah, it's the whole idea of how to structure, articulate with human behavior. Because if you're looking for behavior change, then you really need to design the system to deliver the behaviors which delivers the outcomes. So that whole idea of understanding what we can do about how we structure, how we measure, how we reward, if we start to align that to drive the desired behaviors that we think are critical to delivering the desired outcomes, then we're a step closer. It's sort of a sociologist's approach to structuring this mini society we're creating within a business or an organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And then admitting that design will not get over it all. You know, that there will always be then people misalignment happening just because people are people. And you can never design everyone into complete alignment. Yeah. Any other points? I'm happy to have a conversation offline with anybody if you're interested. But I'm pleased from the comments that there's some that at least got people to think a bit, maybe.
Yeah.
Lindsay, I would love to understand more about what you're doing and look at alignment more deeply, because I think in org design, this alignment is something very fundamental. And whether it's like the three types of alignment, like you said about earlier in the slide, like about whether enterprise level or, to people to people level. So I would love to understand more about what's happening, what are you doing, and share about, my experiences, with alignment. So well, happy to take. Yeah.
Great. Well, I've left my the website link in the chat. You can contact me through there and, happy to talk about it. And I think possibly one of the suggestions that was made after the first breakout, was it earlier on in this call, was that actually just designing in space for people, if leaders can understand the value of this, designing in the space for people to check their assumptions, to reflect, and to prioritize alignment as an agenda. So it's almost like having alignment as a standard, actually. If alignment is a standard rather than just a thing that is supposed to happen on the side and is a bit messy, which I think is the current state, you could design that in, right? Regular measurements, check-ins, and it does really overlap with organization development, of course, yeah. But yeah, happy to chat. So
a caution not to assume that alignment is desired at the executive level of an organization. There are organizations that believe that competition is the way to move forward, and that by competing division to division and section to section within a division is a good thing. And then in that case, your alignment approach causes problems for people that they don't want to deal with. And those unintended consequences shouldn't be discounted.
Well, it almost seems like the alignment issue then moves to a different organizational unit. Mm-hmm. If you're operating under that philosophy that you have parts of the organization competing with each other, then for me, if I'm in that organization that I'm trying to find the best alignment as a means to success for my individual group. So it's interesting that it cascades and deploys in a different way.
We actually only with 5 to 20 participants in a team. So it's only possible to actually really assess perception alignment when they are operating under the same operational shared goals. because otherwise you're asking people to say, you know, what's going on when they haven't, they've got to be able to observe the behavior to a certain extent of the people that they're in the same assessment with. It's not an assessment, sorry, with the diagnostic, and they've got to be able to comment on the same context. So if you have different teams competing with each other, they still need to be aligned within the teams who are on the same side.
But in some of our practices, we're trying to align 25, 35,000 people around the world to get things done, where the chemical is manufactured in China and it's shipped to someplace else, or, you know, in oil and gas, the exploration is managed out of Texas and the drilling is taking place in Alaska and the refinement is taking place in Oklahoma. The hybrid workplace has existed for a long, long time. And even before technology enabled the hybrid workplace. But so, you know, the idea that teams, you know, aligning teams has only gotten, you know, less complicated with technology than more complicated with it.
That's where I got my inspiration, actually, in the energy industry. With the difficulties there. And I think that's, if you're with large organizations, you really just want to make sure that the regional and functional and executive leadership teams are aligned, because they are talking to everybody else. So the team approach is absolutely viable. It's just, you just need to go higher.
But are they aligned on the surface? And is all the misalignment showing up at the next two tiers in the organization? That's where the frustration is. We call it the crushed middle. The people on the front line are filling out the employee engagement surveys and they're giving the feedback that says that, you know, I don't feel connected to my company. You've got the people in the middle, they're saying, yeah, but they feel connected to me. They just don't feel that I'm connected to the company. Then the next level up is, bravo, you're doing exactly what I want you to do. How do you reconcile a 30-point score on an employee engagement survey with a superior rating as a leader and a full bonus distribution? That's org design.
Right.
How do you design those disconnects out of an organization?
Come down then to the design of the questions, because we're employee engagement questions would usually ask questions that people want to know the answers to, as opposed to discovery-based questions, which elicit the extent of alignment within that team, not trying to have them report on how other people are. Mm-hmm. And if you look at learning behaviors and you look at the way that a leadership team understands a position and the way that the responsibility, they are aligned around their responsibilities to cascade information properly and how people are observing that, you're into an entirely different set of questions and insights than the employee survey, which is notoriously underutilized and et cetera.
And fraught with consultant terminations.
Right, and consultant costs also. If a team is aligned, the research shows that they are more effective. And if they are more effective in executing their responsibilities, then you can start to see a causal link between ineffective alignment data that is not good and performance down the organization.
Mm-hmm. And to chip in here, we are helping organizations, I think, like, in all fairness, organizations try their best to align things, you know, with their with their resources and with their capital, with their intellect, right, with their best of intention. They try their best to align. But on the other side, we have the employees, right? And I think, it's about, like, you know, is the employee aligned with himself or herself first? You know, like, let's start with that, you know, because no matter how much we as org design consultants try and help, you know, the leadership team and, align the organizations, the employees need to make a choice, right? Are you aligned with the organization or not? I mean, as much as the organization wants to pull you in, right, to its strategy, you need to make a choice as an employee whether you feel that pull or not, whether you resonate or not. And I feel that alignment then comes at a very fundamental level for an employee. It looks like, am I aligned with myself or not? Number one. And if I'm aligned with myself, does that alignment with myself ripple to alignment with my team and then with my larger organization? So I think it has the both side of the spectrum. One is the organization trying to align with itself, with its core purpose. And on the other side, I think it's the employees who need to align with themselves first, and then with the team, with their, you know, with their regional boss, with the regional head, and with the larger organization. And I think, you know, we need to see both aspects of the spectrum. Yeah.
So we do have a question that says, is the organization's purpose aligned with your personal purpose? And the point of alignment data is not to give everybody the answers. It's just to point to what could be the cause of the problem and what needs to be given more attention, which is where the dialogue comes in. And this is where this turns into a coaching change management proposition, really, and organization development piece. But when you are designing the output of the data and the questions to result in just showing which doors need to be opened in a conversation, then you're really getting somewhere, because you're never going to be able to put a report on a desk to somebody and say, okay, that's the solution to your problems. I mean, it's just, if you get half of the organization saying, no, I am not aligned, my purpose is not aligned very much at all to the organization's purpose.
Which is the reality for a lot of people.
Absolutely. But otherwise, the communications and HR department will go in overdrive on huge, great marketing messaging on what is going on with the strategy, what are we trying to achieve. You know, we need to get them engaged, of course. But if people aren't fundamentally aligned on a purpose level to that, it's just going to be noise. So to really understand alignment is to understand that piece. There was this book called The Art of Dialogue by William Isaacs, and The Art of Dialogue just is fantastic, because it really brings that home that point that alignment is not with individual people. It's the meaning that's shared between people, or in between how they are and how they are at their workplace, as you say. And so in that case, you know,
I really enjoyed that shared space of meaning of that's alignment, that's where alignment, you know, resides.
Yeah, right. It's almost irrelevant who thinks what or who's wrong or who's right. If the shared meaning is not fit for purpose, then they are not going to be effective together. So, you know, really moving away from the individual view and just saying, okay, what, here's a mirror, that's obviously the brand, here's the mirror around what is the reality going on, all its bumps and warts and all, and therefore, what do we need to talk about to improve that, which is a far cry from what did we design and what is the performance of the organization. And then you've got this gap in the middle of, okay, but how did that happen? And it's about how people are connected to it, of course. Not to have all of the, this is not a silver bullet or anything, but I think it's a missing piece at least.
Thanks.
I have to drop off the line myself now. So it's been really nice meeting you. I've got to run. Thank you very much, Tanya, for your help. And for your participation, you guys. Nice to speak to you afterwards.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes,
do make
contact if you want to.
We appreciate your time, Lindsay, for preparing all this and sharing your genius with the rest of the community. That's wonderful.
No worries. Okay, thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tanya.